Mr. Hildy God's place, it was always full. So when you see a place full like that, by all means, it was a good house. I know it was a good house because we did the hydro, and believe me, we used to operate 4 or 5 big Humber 7-seater cars at the weekend from the hydro. It was that busy, year after year, and they always had possibly the same staff year after year. So it was definitely was a good hotel. And there was pretty well all like that, you know. They were real nice. The food and everything was excellent. And everyone, really speaking, I came across in the taxi and were always pleased of the treatment they got, you know. But
and the hotels, I mean, would you have arrangements with any particular one to call there in the morning with a coach or a taxi?
Yes, sir. The hotels would sometimes put a list up for different coach runs or taxi runs, and the driver would go the night before, pick up the runs, and then he would know what to do the following day. But it was very, very busy indeed regarding taxiing. They used to also, going back to the TT week, I remember one incident that happened. I had a big Hummer 6-seater, 6 and 7 with the driver, quite a big car. I had a party from the Sandy Ford who were going around the TT course. Started from the grandstand, and there was one gentleman had a gaudy yellow jumper on him, really just the colour of a wasp, really. We proceeded along the TT course on Glencrutchy Road, making the commentary of different places of importance. And unfortunately, when we were going in towards Ramsey, and then we were pulling up towards Guthrie's War Memorial, I knew something had gone wrong with this big Humber. So I stopped in the position I could definitely swing it round and toot it back into Ramsey, if need be, which it was the case. I lifted the bonnet up and found that the fan belt was gone, broken. Didn't hesitate. Turned the car down, freewheeled into Ramsey, and a little garage in the West Quay, very nice people. They fitted me up with a temporary fan belt. Then, after that, I proceeded on to the TT course, going up past Guthrie's. And then, after the finish of the TT course, I took my party to the Sandy Ford. And one gentleman got out and he said, "By the way, driver, do you know who that gentleman is in the gaudy yellow jump?" I said, "No, I don't know, sir." Well, he said, "He's one of the TT riders. His name is Tommy Spann." But I used to drive many of the TT drivers and car racing drivers. I used to drive Freddie Dixon. He was a car racing driver, sidecar rider, and used to go with his Mrs. Dixon.
Did they want to see the course for pleasure or to go round it and get it in their mind's eye correctly?
Well, the last time I met Freddie Dixon and the party, Artie Bell and them all, they were used to go from Douglas to the Neptune Club and Ramsey, the Neptune Club. And I had a big Hudson, a lovely big car, like a big gangster, big 7-seater. And it had 2 changes. It had an electric column change on the wheel. It also had an ordinary gear change. If you used the electric column, it would go up and down itself in the gears. And if you switch it off the electric, you could use the gear stick. Well, I'll never forget it. I had a crowd of TT riders going to the Neptune Club. Freddie Dixon was one. And I was up there going around the mountain and just about halfway around the TT course, and I went to get the gear stick, and there was no gear stick there. The gear stick was just left out, and I looked through the mirror and there was Freddie Dixon with the gear stick in his hand. So I needed to switch on the light and wish he was going all okay. But he just done it for a bit of a lark. But they were always like that, having a bit of a laugh. And everybody enjoyed it. But going back to the landaulets, the nicest landaulet I had was CMN 431, Armstrong Siddeley, round about 1930 model and 30 horsepower. At one time it was owned by Alfred Call at Peel Road. We bought it from them.
Did you have other friends in the trade who you'd talk about it with, and would you chat with the other taxi drivers?
Well, they were all friends really in the taxi business. The one thing about the taxi business, especially Saturday mornings when you're going along and it was very, very busy, if any taxi driver's in trouble, maybe a puncture or what have you, what would happen then, no matter how busy it was, you always found the gentleman taxi driver, pull up, help to change the wheel and get the man on the road. They were all a good crowd of cab drivers, excellent.
And was it hard to make enough money in the season? Because I noticed that to keep yourself going during the winter, you used to drive buses in England.
Really speaking, the sum was very short, and the money at that time was, as I've just mentioned, for instance now, I've known the fares to be as low as half a crown. Half a crown, that was for the taxi. That would be from the boat properly to the Villa Marina. Then it went up to as you went along, it went up to 3 shillings from Broadway over to as far as Esplanade. And I think when it passed there, you got 3 and 6. And if you went up the drives, Mona Drive, Empress Drive or Castle Drive, you got 4 shillings. But continuing right over towards the Derby Castle, you were looking at about 5 shillings. So it wasn't a big lot of money, but you enjoyed it somehow. And, you know, like you were happy. You're happy, you had nice people. Good laughs and joking and things like that. Really speaking, it's quite a good life taxiing. Met different people day in and day out.
And you never used to mind, you never used to mind working early mornings or late nights?
No, I didn't mind early because you had to get up early mornings to get the business. And when the business wasn't, the business wasn't there, you had maybe a 3 or 4 hours nap. But the people themselves would go down asking, have you seen such and such a person, such and such, because they got used to you, and that's it. They sort of liked you, and they liked your driving. They would always ask each summer, have you seen such and such a person?
And thinking of the winter work, can you tell me when you first got the idea of going across to get some winter work?
Well, regarding the winter work and winter, a self-employed person, especially in taxi, anything like that, self-employed person, work was not very good on the island in the 50s and going on in the 60s, not on the island. So the only alternative you had would be if you could, England was wanting to release bus drivers. And the reason why I went away, I seen this advert in the paper, wanted bus drivers, Coventry Transport. So I went along to Coventry Transport and passed the test, medical, driving test, and what have you, and as a driver, conductor, and courier driver. And then when Coventry Transport has got an agreement that you can only go there twice, they were a good company. You always got a bonus every week from that company, bonus each week in your wage packet. But after that, I went with the Midland Red following years, with the Midland Red Birmingham. And they were quite nice people, put many, many hours in there, driving all over the place.
How did your wife feel about you going away for the winter?
Well, it wasn't matter how you feel. You had to, by all means, I never liked being out of work, actually. And that's the reason you couldn't get work here. And then I used to go away and I liked driving, really. And then I was with the Middle Dredge. And then I also, in spare times, I used to go with a firm in Coventry. And part-time, also if I was off, and drive articulators, as we see them many, many times on TV, three cars up and three cars down, six cars pulling. And then the last big firm I worked in England was the Croswell Buses, Cheshire area. I was down Chester. I've still got the badge number there, CC, with the number on it, Chester, taxi drivers. But I was one-man bus driver there and double-decker. But a funny thing about the Chester, I remember one time pulling off the stand. I was a one-man bus, 40-seater, and I was going to a nice place called Bunbury, a nice cathedral at the terminus. There's a little street you pass called Bridge Street, which is similar to Strand Street, but very small, much smaller. All antique shops and different shops, chemists and what have you. And I glanced through the bed and I seen this gentleman running. Of course, I pulled up and stopped. And I asked the gentleman, I said, "Where are you going to, sir, please?" He said, "Where do you come from, you, sir?" And I found out that his name was Mr. Quayle, and he had in the chemist shop down in Bridge Street. But I've met many times like that, even up in the Midlands. Up in the Midlands there, I stopped at the pedestrian crossing there, and it was Mrs. McCarry and her daughter, and a plumber, Billy Kelso the plumber. I pulled up for them, not knowing they were Manx people until he looked up.
And would there be many people in the taxi trade who would go to England for the winter work?
Yes,
that something that just yourself did?
No, I think there was two or three went across to the Midlands to drive different vehicles, you know. But, you know, like, how you get to know the routes, I'll never know, because nobody was there to tell me. And I remember doing a run one time, the L68 from Coventry into Leicester. And it was a road like something like Cueg in various places, not a wide road. And of course, it was a double decker I had. The blinds were down, and I asked the conductor, "Did he know?" He said, "Oh, I know, no. He said, "They were back of my hand." Anyhow, I explained to him, I said, "Wouldn't it be once I've been there?" Well, he said, "I'll tell you what I'll do. When you set off from here, if you come to Crossroads," he says, "I'll give you one bell for a left turn, I'll give you two bells for a right turn, and don't overlook," he said, "four bells for to go straight on. Three bells, you see, with the emergency bell." So nevertheless, luck went with me. We got there and back, but thanks to the conductor, one little slip with him, and that was my name would have been that mud. That's it.
Mm. And thinking about the Isle of Man, how would you feel when you came back to start work again, when the summer was on, coming back from England?
Well, coming back from England, really speaking, oh, I forgot to overlook, I've overlooked this too. Mm. In Victoria Street, there was Mr. and Mrs. Wally Farragher. They were in charge of the tourist board down there. And each year, I used to go away to the, no matter whether it was Midlands or the Cheshire area, I would take along with me a big case, quite a big case, of brochures all about the island, Isle of Man for happy holidays and what have you. Sometimes a big thick books in. They got very used to me, Wally Farragher and his good lady. And the likes of Coventry, Standard Motor Company, 12,000 employees employed there in the 50s. I had permission, I used to hand them a little brochure. Because I thought to myself, well, the island's such a pretty little place, I like them to see it. And this happened in many, many years when I used to go away. I used to hand them brochures out for the tourist board. Mr. and Mrs. Wally Farragher got used to me going down to them.
A splendid idea.
Yes. That's it.
And so you'd be coming back ready to start your taxi run, coming back from England?
I used to come back from England around about the second week in May, I would say. And then I would get the taxi, take them off the blocks, get it ready for test before the practice of TT, off for the test in the quarter bridge, and on the road again for the TT practice.
And did you always have the money to get a new vehicle when you wanted one, or did people tend to keep the old vehicles running because it was just summer work?
Well, where it is, you see, my wife's a Lancashire girl, she's St. Helens. I had a son died, and he was an apprentice mechanic. He can mechanic now, a very good mechanic, and Adrian. And she was a very good person for saving. And what money I'd sent home, she saved and built and built and built and built up. And we proved, between the family and the wife, the son, and the daughter-in-law now, and the grandchildren, we've been successful. But there was no shortage of hard work all the time. But we enjoyed it, and that was it.
And can I ask you, what were your favourite visitors to drive around? I mean, maybe from a certain place. I mean, did you like the young ones or the old ones? Or maybe the Irish, the Scots, the English?
Well,
who did you like the most?
Well, I liked any people really. They were all nice people. Very nice people, they were all nice.
And fun and jokes would they get up to? Or do you remember any particularly dreadful days when everything went wrong?
No, I don't think so. But I'll tell you a place I did forget. And many, many people used to often go along there. There used to be down the Edward Pier, I think there were four little ferry boats. You'd carry about 100 people, maybe more, each. The singer's name used to be on that boat. There was a girl called Lily. And a man who used to play the ukulele was Jimmy Ventro. He had a big red nose. Anyhow, these ferry boats used to go from the pier over to the battery pier, the breakwater. And these used to alight from there, and then they would walk up past the petrol station, up along onto Douglas Head. And that did bring, I'm not joking, thousands of people up ahead. The name of them boats, somebody may remember them, but there were four: the Rose, the Thistle, the Shamrock, and the Daffodil. Now, after a season's work, those boats had to be looked into, and they used to take them up towards a place called the Bridge, up the Tongue, they used to call it. Well, they used to go up the Tongue. And I remember Albert Gribben and Albert, there was two Albert, they used to repair and make certain that they were seaworthy for the following year. Albert Woods and Albert Gribben were the two men who used to do the job. They had a little fire, just made up fire, a 5-gallon drum with holes in it, coke, burnt with coke, and they had rivets, I would say about maybe 8 inches. And used to get them red hot. And he would be about 15 or 20 feet away. And as soon as the river got really red hot, one fella had a pair of clippers, and believe it or believe not, he would throw the rivet, and the other man, the other side, would catch it and hammer it into whatever they were doing with the boat, putting new rivets in. But how had he done that, I'll never know. To go and catch a rivet that was in the air. And as I mentioned, they were very, very busy. Douglas Head was definitely a very busy place. And alighting onto the battery pier, that's a breakwater, you've seen dozens of fishing girls down there, and maybe about a dozen boats in there, what they used to call the croak, in between the Victoria Pier and the breakwater. From different places, Lowestoft, Maryport, and places like that, Peel, Ramsey. Oh, and there would be the fisher girls.
And just before I forget, you also mentioned that you had the pleasure of driving the artists around from the Villa Marina and places like Ken Dodd and Morecambe Wise, Tom Jones.
Yes, we used to drive there.
Would that be in the 60s more?
Yes, we used to drive there, the Kengard, and many times. And used to go with the young lady in India, a very nice lady. And we used to take him mostly to the airport. He used to go to the Villa Marina, take all the luggage and belongings, and then on to the airport. Tom Jones and all used to stay in the Palace Hotel. Tom Jones, he used to, along with his manager, and that was it. And then we had many, many groups. Rolling Stones, Dave Clark Five, and many, many Seekers. I can mention plenty, and we used to drive along them, and that was it.
And they'd be the airport. And just thinking about the airport, nowadays a lot of people come by airplane.
Well, I think
would you have seen a change over the years in the number of people you were taking to the airport, maybe more people over the years?
Well, there's a big, they had a big change, actually, because, as I mentioned, the steam packet had a number of boats. We had the Liverpool, come from Liverpool, off a Saturday. I've mentioned some busy Saturdays you would have maybe three or four boats come from Liverpool, and especially Adrossan, you'd have two or three come from Adrossan. And then you had Heysham, then you had Fleetwood, then you had the Llandudno boat. Now, the Llandudno boat, it was a boat that many passengers, it used to come in the afternoon, and many passengers, they liked to get out in the country, a tour around. That was a good boat, you always got down to that. It was called St. Ivel. But the reason being where the people come by air now is because they haven't got the boats. You've only got to look at the likes of the old boats. They would carry between 2,000 and maybe 2,500 passengers each.
So who would be coming by air when you were taxiing them around? Would it tend to be the richer people that would come by air, or the businessmen, or the visitors?
I think that there's an awful lot of business people. Really, they come to and fro by air, especially when these big new offices have started up. I will say one thing about the offices. They have, by all means, brought into the island a lot of employment. There's only about 2 or 3% out of work, but as I mentioned before, there was quite a number out of work, hundreds out of work, couldn't get work. So that's one good point.
I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you something else as well about the when you got into the funeral directing business. Now, some of the hoteliers have told me that if someone died in the hotel, they would almost have to smuggle them out in the night because it disturbed the other guests. Did you ever have to do that?
Yes, come out
in the night time?
Yes, we have done that. We have done that. But it's done... by all means, with the timing of the person, whether in an hotel or maybe wherever it may be. It's done by the proprietor and the funeral director. We go along, and by all means, we have everything already prepared, and we go along, and nobody would ever notice that we'd been there. Job, the work, the person would be removed and that would be it. But you do everything as quiet as possible as you can. And you've got to be nice and approach in every way. And that's it. So.
I think that you give me a very useful and very interesting picture of what it used to be in Douglas and driving the taxis and the buses and... Thank you very much. Is there anything I should have asked about that haven't?
Well, we did. There's one thing we did miss, really speaking. That was the quayside, Douglas Head. For instance, now, I missed the camera house. The camera house in Douglas Head was definitely a wonderful... It's a wonderful to have a camera house like that because... I'm talking about thousands of people used to go up there. Now, if a father or mother lost a child, maybe the child might have gone astray, they could go to that camera house and they could look through them lens and they could find exactly the field where that child was or whoever was lost. Now that was one good point. And the people who used to run that camera house for many, many years, I can go back 60, 70 years easy, were the Heaton family. They were a family and they lived in Douglas Head Road. Now there was two roads going up Douglas Head years gone by. On the left-hand side going up was the Douglas Head Road, which was in Douglas. But on the right-hand side, the houses, was the Fort Anne Road, and that was in Braddon. For instance, the golf course would be in Braddon, Fort Anne Golf Links. And the Howe Farm above that would be in Braddon. But one side was Douglas, but then it was brought into the one Douglas Head Road.
And Douglas Head, that was a great place for the visitors.
Well, yes, it was a very busy place, really, and I think it is now, Douglas Head, because there's lots of factories up there now, and it's very busy. But the quayside itself, going down to the quayside, it was a place there where you used to get all the boats coming in, boats from different places, coal boats especially, and it was a place there where there was plenty of hard work done. Coal boats coming in, coal getting, I remember the coal coming in, little small boats, about 170 ton, and little horse and carts there would maybe take about 30 hundredweight or 2 ton away, and he cart into the yard, and the car would tip up, they tip the cart up, and then there'd be 6 trimmers in the yard, and you'd trim the coal up, maybe in the finish of around about 20 feet. And then after the boat was finished, the trimmers in the yard would get about 11 and threepence. They would go, there was no hot water then. No such thing as hot water then. You weren't mollycoddled. You get your old an old dolly tub, though maybe your mother or wife would be using for washing clothes. And you just get yourself half a full of water in the dolly tub, cold water, and you'd have a couple of buckets of water right alongside you. And as soon as you wash yourself down, especially summertime is all right, as soon as you wash yourself down, you just a couple of buckets of water over the top of you, and then dry yourself down. Within about an hour, you were down Strand Street then, with a fellowman's book there, having the sing song. That's it.
That's a good time.